Good evening. In the news tonight, Hurricane Matthew, which has roared through the Caribbean, now heads for Florida.
Put this in perspective. This is life-threatening. We have a hurricane. You can rebuild a home. You can rebuild property. You cannot rebuild a life.
Sexual harassment of fast food workers at McDonald's is not okay.
We're going to have more and more brave workers come out and say, I am not ashamed. You should be ashamed. You should be in jail.
Advocates and the city council clash over small business protection.
We get enormous, you know, entire buildings are being emptied out in industrial zones, and hundreds and thousands of artists are losing their spaces, and some are leaving the city.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Thursday, October 6, 2016. Hurricane Matthew, the fiercest Caribbean storm in nearly a decade, is strengthening as it barrels towards the southeastern U.S. after killing at least 140 people, mostly in Haiti. An estimated 350,000 Haitians need humanitarian assistance, according to the U.N. The head of the U.N.'s humanitarian office in Port-au-Prince said weather conditions prevented a thorough evaluation so far, but the damage has been extensive. Matthew Wells reports.
According to news reports, at least 65 have been killed, with thousands displaced and thousands of homes destroyed by heavy winds registering at 145 miles per hour. Flooding and the collapse of communications networks, together with a key bridge, have left many areas of the country inaccessible. Haiti's Electoral Council announced that presidential elections planned for Sunday would have to be postponed. Enzo de Taranto is head of office for OCHA in Haiti, and on Thursday morning he said that there had been no word on conditions in the northwest of the island, which was struck hard by Matthew. His words are spoken by an interpreter.
Concerning the south, however, we can confirm major damage across the territory. We have unclear and very preliminary numbers. We have an estimated 1.5 million affected people, with 350,000 people in need of humanitarian assistance.
He added that a specialized post-disaster evaluation team would go out into the field on Thursday, weather permitting, to make a full evaluation. He said the UN mission, MINUSTAH, would work with the government to establish two operation centers in Les Cayes and Jeremy. Matthew Wells, United Nations.
Here in the U.S., there is a state of emergency in Florida. The National Weather Service says the hurricane is a Category 4, but could be a Category 5 hurricane. With a Category 4, winds range from 131 to 155 miles per hour. With a Category 5, winds can be greater than 155 miles per hour and cause catastrophic damage to property, humans, and animals, with complete or almost complete destruction of mobile homes, frame homes, apartments, and shopping centers. Nearly all trees in the area would be expected to be snapped off or uprooted. Florida's Governor Scott said this storm can kill you. 2 million people across the southeast were warned to flee inland. Hurricane Matthew is the most powerful storm to threaten the U.S. Atlantic coast in more than a decade. Scott says the storm has already killed people. We should expect the same impact in Florida.
This hurricane is strengthening. We're going to see landfall about 2 a.m. First off, think about your cell phone. It can be a lifesaver. Keep it charged. The National Weather Service is going to continue to send updates. That might save your life. Storm surge. It's gotten worse. Up to 12 feet of storm surge potential in Taylor and Dixie County. 12 feet of storm surge. That is life-threatening. We're going to see storm surge in Citrus, Levy, Wakulla, and Franklin counties also. Rain, 5 to 10 inches of rain, but it is a potential of 20 inches of rain, which means significant flooding. We have significant risk for tornadoes. That's where your cell phone is going to come in handy, because the National Weather Service hopefully will be able to send you an update. We have mandatory evacuations in a portion of some counties. Franklin, Taylor, Dixie, Wakulla, and Levy. Follow evacuation orders. It can save your life. Remember, we cannot rescue you during a storm.
The hurricane is expected to scrape nearly the entire length of Florida's Atlantic coast beginning this evening. From there, forecasters say it's expected to push along the coast of Georgia and South Carolina before veering out to sea. Millions in Florida, in Georgia, in South Carolina were told to head for safety. Interstate highways were turned into one-way routes to speed the exodus. Scott said Florida could be looking at its biggest evacuation ever. Many boarded up their homes and their businesses and left them to the mercy of the storm. Follow the National Weather Service by going to forecast.weather.gov. In other news, in Syria, in Aleppo, thousands of people could die and the whole city may soon be destroyed unless rebel fighters retreat from the city and Syria and Russia call a halt to their aerial bombing campaign. This is according to UN Staffan Mistura. In a direct appeal to the three parties in the more than five-year-old conflict, the UN Special Envoy for Syria said the writing is on the wall for Aleppo civilians. Daniel Johnson reports from Geneva.
Some 275,000 civilians are besieged in eastern Aleppo, which has become a key battleground between the Syrian government and opposition forces. Among the rebels are between 900 and 1,000 former al-Nusra fighters, who are now called Jabhat Fateh al-Sham. Unless they pull back from the city, UN Special Envoy for Syria Staffan de Mistura warned, the situation risked becoming another Srebrenica and even another Rwanda, a reference to past conflicts where civilians paid the highest price.
Reality is the writing on the wall in front of us. If this continues to be the pattern at this rate, unless there is any major game changer that may change the equation, this cruel, constant use of military activities, bombing, fighting, destruction in eastern Aleppo will continue.
In his appeal to the rebels, Mr. de Mistura called on them to leave eastern Aleppo in dignity and with their weapons. He also said he was prepared to accompany them as a guarantee of their safety. The UN negotiator made a second appeal, this time to Syria and Russia, asking whether they were prepared to carry on using weapons that risked destroying the whole eastern part of Aleppo for the sake of eliminating the rebels. At the Special Envoy's side, UN Humanitarian Task Force co-chair Jan Egeland said that 861,000 Syrians are now besieged inside the country, nearly 400,000 more than in February. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In local news, Mayor Bill de Blasio said five people at ACS, the Administration for Children's Services, are being looked at in the death of six-year-old Zamir Perkins. But de Blasio, at a news conference today, lawyered up about details in the investigation into the death of the little Harlem boy 10 days ago.
The Law Department of the City of New York, which is effectively one of the biggest law firms in the United States of America, said very clearly, here are the ground rules for talking about this. And here's when they will change. When an investigation is complete, we will then be able to publish it and speak to it. So my argument would be, if we're telling you something really bad happened here, major changes are going to be made, people are going to be held responsible, and you're going to get a full accounting after an investigation, and we do investigations in criminal matters of all kinds, that conforms with everything we would do, for example, in a standard police matter. We're not going to tell you the results of something until we have the facts.
Last week, the boy's mother, Geraldine Perkins, and her boyfriend, Rasheem Smith, were charged with child endangerment. The mother told cops Smith regularly beat the child with a broomstick and his fists. The city failed to intervene despite substantiating five prior allegations of abuse since the summer of 2015. New York City's public advocate Tish James says ACS is fundamentally broken. She says its current commissioner has failed to fix it. She added that no child deserves to die because of mismanagement or lack of oversight. We won't surrender another life to the very broken system that's supposed to protect our children. The five Administration for Children's Services employees who were involved in the case have been placed on modified assignment during the investigation into the little boy's death. In other news, there was a rally today in front of a Times Square McDonald's.
One Big Mac, extra cheese, hold the sexual harassment.
Alyssa Conadaro with Now New York stands in front of McDonald's near Times Square today. The message is sexual harassment of workers must stop at this McDonald's and at other McDonald's across the country.
I have been at this corner many times.
New York State Assembly member Linda Rosenthal.
Actually, I think the first time was about 4 years ago at 6 a.m. when we were fighting for 15. And you know what happened? We won.
That's right.
So let that be a lesson here to McDonald's and all the other fast food employers. You know, when women go in the subway, they're sexually harassed. When women walk on the street, they're catcalled. But when women are harassed at their place of employment, it is unacceptable because they are not here for fun. They are here to support their families. They are here so their children will have food and clothing. And they do not have the option of getting off at the next stop or walking to another street. They must be here at unpredictable times. Their schedules change, and yet they are good workers, and they are treated abysmally when their superiors say, it doesn't matter to me that someone felt you up. It does not matter that someone put their hand on your breast. Well, you know what? It does matter. It absolutely matters. And we're here today and around the U.S. to say, not acceptable. You've had many chances, many warnings to bring your business into compliance with the law. And from now on, we're going to have more and more brave workers come out and say, I am not ashamed. You should be ashamed. You should be in jail. And you should follow the law.
Que mi compañera, tengo una compañera que ella no quiere hablar.
Rosa Rivera, a worker at McDonald's in Washington Heights, is speaking out for workers afraid to come forward.
Que manager le pega nalgazo a ella.
The manager smack her butt.
Le hace así en la cara.
Greg Reynoso is a community activist.
Rosa was saying that happened to a coworker in her store, but her coworker is really scared. That's why she couldn't make it. She didn't want to talk. The manager was like, bumping her butt and touching her face and insinuating her. In her case, she's saying that the manager was asking her to go back to the place that is no cameras so they can, do stuff, but she told him, nah, I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna call the police. And he also was insinuating her, and he also told her that if she don't do it, he was gonna take retaliation against her, which he ended up doing it because he took her off the schedule.
A new survey by the Ms. Foundation and the National Partnership for Workers and Their Families found that 40% of women in the fast food industry have experienced unwanted sexual behavior on the job. This includes 28% who have experienced multiple forms of harassment. Workers regularly are harassed with sexual teasing, jokes, questions about sexual interests, hugging, and touching.
It takes courage to go public about sexual harassment, which is humiliating, which is embarrassing. And that is one of the reasons why it is too often not in the spotlight.
Sonia Osorio is president of Now New York.
I want you to imagine for a moment what it's like being part of the 40% of people, the workers in the fast food industry, who are routinely sexually harassed on the job. As you put your uniform on, what goes through your mind? Will it happen today? What will happen today? Do you pray, oh Lord, please, por favor, deja que ese hombre no viene al trabajo hoy? It's a constant. It's a constant not knowing when will be the next time. For Cortez, one McDonald's employee in Flint, one day it was a photo of her manager's genitalia. And the next, the same manager actually rubbing up against her while she's working. For Consuelo in Phoenix, her manager unsnapped her bra while she's working the drive-through window.
The workers at McDonald's say harassment is widespread. 17-year-old Gabby has been harassed at a McDonald's on Long Island. She worked the 4 to 1:30 a.m. shift for 7 months. She says she wouldn't go along with sexual advances.
In her case, she's saying the manager was asking her to go back to the place that is no cameras so they can, do stuff, but she told him, nah, I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna call the police. And he also was insinuating her, and he also told her that if she don't do it, he was gonna take retaliation against her, which he ended up doing it because he took her off the schedule, and that's why she's here.
Que no estuvo bien eso y que mejor ya no trabaje.
Gabby says what happened to her wasn't good, that it's better she doesn't work there.
Ella ha estado muy triste desde que la dejaron sin schedule. Solo quiere dormir a la hora que le tocaba su trabajo. Ha estado muy triste ella.
Gabby's mom, who stands with her, says it's sad she was taken off the schedule, but it's better she doesn't continue to work at McDonald's. Shirley Aldebol is organizer with SEIU 32BJ, which has been instrumental in the fight for 15.
The fight for fast food workers is ongoing. We got $15 in New York, right? And the minimum wage was raised in New York to $15, largely because of this fight and because of these workers putting themselves out there and going on strike. But they want 15 and a union, and they want 15 and respect.
Right now.
It's not just
right
about $15.
Right now.
So these workers are going to continue to fight. They're going to continue to organize because they deserve respect.
Right now.
And sexual harassment is probably one of the worst forms of disrespect that could be, you know, put upon these workers.
SEIU says McDonald's has to recognize that workers have the right to form a union and have respect on the job. Reverend Andrew Wilkes is with Allen Cathedral AME Church in Jamaica. He says he is triple outraged.
This is an issue of not only workplace injustice, this is an issue of racial injustice and gender injustice. 40% of the women who experience sexual harassment are folk of color, predominantly African-American and Latino women. So we have to keep those issues together: workplace justice, gender justice, and racial justice.
Wilkes says we are talking about the hands of people whose hands are held in prayer, whose hands serve us, and it's not okay for sexual harassment to be the norm in the workplace. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other news, two city council committees held a recent hearing about ways to help small businesses. But what was being discussed was not what small business advocates in attendance wanted to hear. Richard Barr has this report.
The Council Committee on Small Business and the Subcommittee on Zoning and Franchises took up the topics of zoning and incentives for promoting retail diversity and preserving neighborhood character. This was intended to address, among other things, the loss of neighborhood mom-and-pop stores. The council members and the representatives of city agencies called on to testify discussed zoning and land use policies, such as size and frontage limitations, chain store restrictions, expanding the amount of commercial spaces by expanding commercial overlays, set-asides of space for small businesses, providing small retail spaces in city-supported developments, and increased capital investment in streetscapes. Those were the proposed zoning and land use policies. And then there were the proposed financial incentives, such as credit line mortgages, reduced corporate tax rates, commercial rent tax breaks, and New York's Urban Community Investment Fund. What the council and other city officials did not come there to address was what small business advocates from outside government wanted to hear about and came themselves to discuss: the need for some kind of commercial rent control and for small businesses to be given leases that are long enough to afford them some stability. Versions of a bill that would accomplish some of these goals have been proposed by council members for the last 30 years and have often attracted the support of a majority of the council, but they have never been permitted to reach the floor for discussion and a vote. The current version of the bill is called the Small Business Jobs Survival Act, or SBJSA. The advocates, who were only given the opportunity to testify at the end of the meeting, when only the two committee chairs, Robert Cornegie and Donovan Richards, were still there to hear them, were the only ones to bring up SBJSA at the hearing. To these advocates, all the other approaches would be mere band-aids on the problem of disappearing small stores. At a rally on the City Hall steps before the hearing, leaders of various community groups expressed similar views on where we are on this issue and the reasons why. Kirsten Theodos is with Take Back NYC.
We're a coalition of residents, small business owners, and community leaders. And we all have one goal, which is to see that City Council votes on and passes the Small Business Jobs Survival Act, which is a bill that's been introduced in City Council in 2014 that would basically give rights to small business owners, artists, anyone with a commercial lease, so they can negotiate a fair lease with their landlord.
Theodore says the bill should have passed in 2009. It had 32 council members supporting it.
And the speaker at the time was Christine Quinn. Right before this bill was to go for a vote, she killed the vote using an unsubstantiated legal roadblock. After that happened, Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz hosted a legal review panel to review and establish the constitutionality of this bill. It was found to be fully constitutional and legal, and there was still no movement. In 2014, Annabelle Palma of the Bronx reintroduced the bill as a Small Business Jobs Survival Act. This is the eighth time. And since 2014, not a single council member has made an amendment to this bill to make it more passable, if you will. That's never happened. That indicates to me that this is clearly isn't a priority for City Council to save our desperate mom and pop business owners who are struggling to survive, not because of rent, not because of fines. They're struggling to survive because of the high rents and not being able to negotiate a fair lease.
I've heard that currently a majority, like 27 council members, supposedly are prepared to vote for this?
Correct. We have 27 council members. That is the majority of the 51-member body of the council sponsoring this bill. I guess what's really disconcerting is, you know, today we have a hearing called by the Small Business Committee to discuss zoning and landlord incentives. And this bill, the Small Business Jobs Survival Act, which is actually addressing the crisis of high rents, is being deliberately excluded from the conversation.
The advocates believe that the SBJSA is not being discussed on the council floor because of real estate industry pressure, specifically the Real Estate Board of New York, or REBNY. Here's Lynn Ellsworth, coordinator of New Yorkers for a Human Scale City, a five-borough alliance of neighborhood, civic, and tenant groups.
The small business sector is gushing blood. We don't need Band-Aids. We need major surgery. And the best surgery we can think of right now is the Small Business Job Survival Act. So it's really perplexing to me that the City Council won't hold a hearing on that act, won't talk about, or just bring it to a vote. There's probably enough people to talk about it. I don't know why, and I'm guessing that it's probably that big real estate doesn't like it. And from what my own research has shown, that seems to be the case. There's a lot of press releases from REBNY saying they don't like it. That's not reason to kill it. And in fact, City Council members who are naysaying the Small Business Job Survival Act on its constitutional grounds should be ashamed of themselves. There's enough legal research to show that this is totally constitutional. It provides the best we can do in terms of security of tenure for small business. So why not bring it to a hearing? Surgery, not Band-Aids.
Jenny Dubnow is with ASAP, the Artist Studio Affordability Project. She also came to City Hall to ask for passage of the SBJSA.
We're undergoing a huge crisis, and the basic reason for the crisis is skyrocketing rents. And the same gentrification that's happening to residential tenants is also happening to commercial tenants. And that goes from mom-and-pop stores to industrial manufacturers to working artists. We get enormous, you know, entire buildings are being emptied out in industrial zones, and hundreds and thousands of artists are losing their spaces, and some are leaving the city.
Like the others, Dubnow sees the real estate lobby as the obstacle to SBJSA successfully moving through the council.
I think in 2010 there was pretty much a supermajority of council members, like 30-something, who were willing to vote for it. Right now we have 28, I believe. That's enough to pass, but it never comes to the floor. Robert Cornegie Jr., who's the head of the Committee on Small Business, just won't bring it to the floor. And in my opinion, the reason it doesn't pass is because the real estate lobby doesn't want it to pass. And I think too many of our elected officials get huge campaign contributions from the real estate board, REBNY. And REBNY has called this bill a constitutional taking, as though giving small businesses and commercial leaseholders the right to negotiate their lease and have a fair say is somehow taking something away from them. And I think that That very language is being used by some city council members right now, that this is, quote, illegal. The bill is not legal. Some of these same council members, like Brad Lander, like Julissa Ferraris, like Melissa Mark Viverito, supported this bill back in 2010, and now they're saying it's illegal. Well, that language is too similar to Rebney's language for me to take it at face value.
As much as the advocates call for the passage of SBJSA, a bill 30 years in the waiting, Dubnow points to a time further back in the city's history when an even better system of small business protections was in place.
What I would love to see in New York City is true commercial rent control, which this bill is not. New York City had true commercial rent control, but from Mayor LaGuardia and Albany, from 1945 to 1963, the city survived, capitalism did not collapse, everyone still... No one got evicted, and it was in response to what they just deemed an emergency with post-war speculation. Now, if we're not in an emergency now, I think it's even worse now than it was, with a city being decimated. There's shuttered small businesses throughout the city in all the boroughs. Residential and commercial tenants are suffering through a crisis, and I want to see some action from this Committee on Small Business, from the City Council, and from the mayor.
Whether some meaningful protection for small businesses has a better chance of emerging from the collaboration of this mayor, this speaker, and this city council than it did in the last three decades remains to be seen. It's clear, though, that many New Yorkers will be satisfied with nothing less. Richard Barr, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, October 6, 2016. The news was produced with Richard Barr and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.